Palestinian home, leaving at least 9 civilians dead and several others injured. Other parts of Deir al-Bala were also targeted by multiple air and artillery attacks, causing over a dozen fatalities. The southern parts of Gaza, including Rafah and Khan Yunis, were not spared from the regime's attacks, which killed over 24 people on Monday. The new fatalities increased the overall toll from the regime's genocide since October 2023 to over 50,750, with nearly 115,480 others injured. According to Palestinian journalist syndicate, the regime has also killed nearly 210 journalists since the onset of its aggression against Gaza. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israeli attacks across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
Actually, the last 24 hours were horrifying and bloody for the Palestinian people in all areas of Gaza Strip as a result of the pernicious and non-stop Israeli genocidal attacks that are still waged left, right and center against the Palestinian people. Since dawn hours till this moment, we are talking about more than 70 Palestinian civilians. Half of them were children, have been completely slaughtered and, as you know, murdered by the Israeli occupation forces. And we are talking about more than 40 Palestinians were killed here in Deir al-Bala city after the Israeli occupation forces launched several brutal and destructive airstrikes targeting the residential buildings here. A fresh massacre unfolded over the past couple of hours in the southern part of Deir al-Bala city after the Israeli warplanes destroyed a populated house. They're killing at least 9 Palestinian civilians. 4 out of them were children, in addition to several women. In the meantime, another attack has just taken place in the northern part of Gaza Strip when the Israeli fighter jets destroyed a residential building there, killing 6 Palestinian civilians. And now, as we speak right now, we can hear several bombardments are still booming in the southern part of Gaza Strip. So the Israeli attacks are still ongoing. More Palestinian civilians are still slaughtered and killed by the Israeli occupation forces.
The heads of 6 UN agencies have issued a grave warning on the situation in Gaza. They called for the immediate resumption of the ceasefire in the territory amid a deepening humanitarian crisis. The agencies warned of severe aid shortages and hunger since Israel resumed its all-out aggression on March the 18th. They said for over a month no commercial or humanitarian supplies have entered Gaza after Israel blocked the entry of aid trucks. The agencies noted that more than 2.1 million people are trapped, bombed, and starved again, while food, medicine, fuel, and other supplies are piling up behind Gaza's closed crossings. The agencies added that at least 1,000 children were killed or injured during the first week after the Israeli genocide resumed, which is the highest one-week children death toll in the past year. Describing the humanitarian situation as unprecedented, the UN agency said the territory is witnessing acts of war in Gaza that show an utter disregard for human life. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of Tel Aviv in a new anti-regime protest as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met with U.S. President Donald Trump in Washington. The protesters slammed Netanyahu's policies, including his move to oust the regime's top security and legal officials. They also condemned the resumption of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Families of Israeli captives held in Gaza also joined the protest, urging an end to the war and a deal to ensure the release of the captives. The mass protest followed a weekly demonstration on Saturday in which protesters called on the regime's cabinet to put the captives above other interests. They also urged the regime to stop violating the Gaza ceasefire deal with Hamas. The movement says it will only release the remaining captives in exchange for the release of more Palestinian prisoners, a permanent ceasefire, and Israel's complete pullout from Gaza. Israeli forces and settlers press ahead with violent raids on Palestinian towns and cities across the occupied West Bank, causing more casualties. According to local sources, an Israeli settler ran over a Palestinian child in Huwara town near Nablus before speeding away. The child was taken to hospital for treatment. Meanwhile, the regime's forces stormed the town of Beita, south of Nablus, firing volleys of tear gas canisters at its residents, causing several Palestinians to suffocate. Israeli settlers protected by the regime's forces also raided the village of al-Khair, south of Al-Khalil, injuring four Palestinians, including an elderly woman. Settler violence against Palestinians and their property is a daily occurrence in the West Bank and is rarely prosecuted by Israeli authorities. A recent report revealed that Israeli settlers carried out nearly 400 attacks on Palestinian citizens and their property in the West Bank in January and February 2025. Welcome back. The Iranian foreign minister has rejected U.S. President Donald Trump's claim that Tehran and Washington will hold direct talks on Iran's nuclear program. Trump made the allegation on the sidelines of his meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington. In response, Abbas Araghchi reaffirmed in a social media post that the Saturday meeting between Iran and the United States in Oman will be high-level but indirect. He added that negotiations in Oman will be both an opportunity and a test, concluding that the ball is now in America's court. His remarks came after earlier on Monday, Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian said Tehran favors negotiations, but not at any cost. He added that the United States needs to prove that it is truly intending to negotiate, noting that the U.S. cannot threaten Iran every day while calling for negotiations. Pezeshkian stressed that the Islamic Republic will not submit to any humiliation. Now, to give you more insight, we are joined by Ken Stone, executive committee member of Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, joining us from Hamilton, Canada. Mr. Stone, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us. Why do you think Donald Trump went as far as falsely claiming that the upcoming nuclear talks between Iran and the United States of America will be direct, while Tehran claimed that it is going to be indirect?
I think that the U.S. approach to Iran and to most countries of the world, in fact, is reckless and dangerous and illegal. The U.S. is trying to use a campaign of maximum pressure on Iran, which it has been using ever since Trump's first administration, to try and force the Iranian government to do things that are flagrantly illegal. For example, even to threaten another country with the use of military force is a violation of the UN Charter, Article 2. But the U.S. goes way beyond that. They have put sanctions, illegal sanctions on Iran, which are unilateral and do not have the blessing of the United Nations Security Council. It makes those sanctions illegal. And they've had these sanctions on many thousands of Iranian institutions and people. These sanctions are a form of economic war. So what the U.S. is doing under Trump is demanding that Iran come to the negotiating table and negotiate with the U.S. while the U.S. is conducting an economic war against Iran. And furthermore, is threatening Iran with destruction because, as everyone probably knows by now, they have brought up strategic bombers to the island of Diego Garcia, which are capable of carrying bunker busting and nuclear weapons to threaten the very existence of Iran's nuclear program, as if Iran's nuclear program were illegal. But Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, 1995, and has abided by that treaty very carefully, even to the point of joining with the U.S. and other countries in the Iran nuclear deal called the JCPOA, which Trump abrogated in 2018. So the man who is threatening Iran, who has brought up warplanes capable of carrying nuclear weapons, who is conducting an economic war on Iran, is now telling Iran that it has to come to the table to talk with the person who broke the agreement that took years to negotiate with the U.S. and other countries, including the permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, and that agreement was ratified as a treaty. So it's utterly ridiculous that the U.S. thinks it can bully its way into direct talks with Iran. Rather, if the U.S. were sincere about wanting to talk about Iran's nuclear program, which it is perfectly entitled to do, and in fact, under the NPT, all the countries who are signatories, and I think there's more than 100 of them, are obliged to help Iran or any other country develop nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. The Iranians do not have a program to develop a nuclear bomb. So if Trump wanted to sit down with the Iranians, he could start by, first of all, removing the sanctions on Iran. He could remove his warplanes from Diego Garcia. He could remove the bases that he has encircled around Iran. He could sit down and talk with Iran in a diplomatic manner rather than holding a sword over the people of Iran. That's my outlook.
Mr. Stone, you mentioned the threats made by Donald Trump. How real do you see those threats?
Well, the threats from Trump are probably real. After all, he is supporting his Israeli proxy in waging a genocide in Gaza and the West Bank. He is supporting that same proxy in waging a war and ignoring a ceasefire in Lebanon. He is allowing his U.S. proxy to attack Syria on a regular basis and help to overthrow the government in Syria. And furthermore, his his planes, along with the British and with Canadian help, military officers in the control room in Bahrain, has launched an illegal war, air war, against Yemen. And Trump recently boasted about executing a number of Yemeni tribespeople who were gathered for an Eid celebration. So this is a brutal, fascistic regime has, I think, alienated almost every country in the world with its economic and military policies. And in the United States, I would think it's popular to threaten countries that are mostly composed of people of color and of different religion than Christianity. So it's possible that his threats are real. But I think that the Iranian people have been putting up with threats from the U.S. for the last 46 years since the revolution took place against the American puppet Shah of Iran. So I'm expecting that the government of Iran, like any self-respecting country, would demand that they be treated in a fair and diplomatic manner, and that if Trump wishes to sit down and talk with Iran, he will end the war in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Yemen, remove the economic warfare against Iran, remove the bombers, and sit down and talk in a peaceful manner.
Thank you so much for your insight. That was Ken Stone, executive committee member from Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, joining us from Hamilton, Canada. Palestinian political factions have declared a general strike for Monday across the occupied Palestinian territories and refugee camps in the diaspora. The move comes in as a protest at the ongoing Israeli military aggression in Gaza, which has claimed tens of thousands of lives. The strike is also a call for global attention and action against the genocide in the besieged strip. Our correspondent Nara Hamed has more on this in her report.
The streets of Palestine fell silent on Monday. In a unified response, Palestinian factions announced a general strike in all Palestinian territories and refugee camps abroad. The move comes in protest at Israel's nonstop assault on Gaza. The factions describe the strike as a collective message to the international community, a demand to halt what they call a systematic genocide. Since October 7, 2023, Israel's military campaign has left over 165,000 Palestinians killed or wounded. The vast majority of them are women and children.
It's crucial for Palestinians to take to the streets. This catastrophe affects all of us, from Gaza to the northern West Bank, with attacks happening everywhere. If we expect the world to act, we must lead the way.
Shops, schools, public institutions, and private businesses closed their doors, echoing the grief and the resistance of the people under siege.
The horrors we're witnessing are unbearable. These crimes demand daily action, not seasonal outrage. The attacks are escalating. Nothing is spared. The crime is massive, and silence is even worse.
From historic uprisings to citywide shutdowns, the general strike remains a powerful tool of resistance.
Today's strike carries key messages: rejecting the genocide, calling on Palestinians everywhere to support Gaza, boycotting Israeli goods, and urging the world to end its silence. Today the war's in Palestine, tomorrow it will extend to other countries. This must stop.
It's time for the people to have a voice and take action. Today marks the beginning, and we will continue until the war on Gaza and the northern West Bank end.
With refugee camps across Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan, and other supporting countries joining in, the voice of the streets is powerful, and the pain of Gaza has reached unbearable levels.
The empty streets and stores here sends a clear message. One is to Gaza that the pain enduring by Palestinians is the same. The other message is for the world that the time has come for a firmer move to stop Israeli crimes. Naqa Hamed, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Take care and bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
By facilitating the wave of airstrikes, arming and funding the Zionist regime, just like his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has once again proven that he is indeed a warmonger. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the sheer intensity of missile strikes and deadly bombings across the besieged Gaza Strip not only marked the settler colonial regime's continuation of the genocide of Palestinians, but also a decisive rejection of the ceasefire it had agreed to go. The child-murdering regime's criminal leadership, particularly Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on the International Criminal Court's wanted list, has sought every pretext under the sun to resume massacring innocent civilians in Gaza. Despite the so-called lull during the first phase of the ceasefire, the Israeli regime had been itching to shed more Palestinian blood, adding to the tens of thousands of martyrs since October 7, 2023. Overnight, while displaced Palestinians subjected to the Zionist regime's inhumane blockade of food, fuel, medication, and other essentials, were preparing suhoor meals in makeshift plastic tents and bombed-out buildings during Ramadan, Netanyahu unleashed another wave of terror upon them. Within minutes, more than 400 civilians were killed, mainly women and children. Over 1,000 more were injured, with no means for medical treatment. Reports indicate that the current military strikes are deadlier and broader in scale than the ongoing drone attacks Gaza has suffered, while Netanyahu repeatedly violated the original ceasefire terms. In response to this aggression, the Gaza-based resistance movement, the Palestinian Resistance Movement of Hamas, condemned the Zionist regime for disregarding its obligations and overturning the truce agreement. Israel, which has repeatedly violated the ceasefire that took effect on January 19th, sought to fabricate new terms to justify blowing up the deal entirely. Journalist Jeremy Shill of Drop News and Abu Bakr Abed of Press TV noted that since January, Netanyahu had waged a campaign of sabotage and provocation, openly violating the agreement by obstructing and outright blocking aid deliveries into the Gaza Strip. Although food and other supplies were permitted during the first 42-day phase of the deal, the Zionist regime refused to allow nearly all 60,000 mobile homes and admitted only a fraction of the 200,000 tents into Gaza. While Netanyahu has attempted to blame Hamas with fabricated charges of undermining the ceasefire, the reality is that the Israeli regime imposed a total blockade on any aid, including food and medical supplies, to the Strip and resumed its policy of using starvation as a weapon of war. Recently, the Israeli regime also cut off Gaza's electricity supply, forcing a major desalination plant to drastically reduce water output, severely limiting drinking water for 600,000 people in Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis. Hamas has remained committed to the agreement and was eager to maintain it, but Netanyahu, looking for a way out of his internal crisis, preferred to reignite the war at the expense of the blood
of our people, Hamas stated. According to Haaretz, Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani demanded immediate international action to force Israel to implement a ceasefire, abide by the agreement, and return to negotiations. That a key mediator is directing demands solely at Israel confirms that, contrary to Netanyahu's claims, Hamas has not violated the agreement. The other side has. This is further reinforced by media reports that families of Israeli captives in Gaza have denounced their own regime, not Hamas. Indeed, Netanyahu's right-wing terror thugs Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich not only welcomed the renewal of scorched earth policies, but gleefully admitted the plans were prepared weeks ago. Ben-Gvir is now set to rejoin the cabinet. Their excitement over the slaughter of innocent mothers and babies reveals more than mere approval. It confirms that Israel never intended to honor the agreement and deliberately plotted to blame Hamas as a pretext for ongoing savagery in Gaza. Since the ceasefire began 60 days ago, the Palestinian resistance and rights organizations have meticulously tracked Israel's repeated violations, as reported by the Palestinian prisoner network Samedun. At the same time, in order to protect their people, the resistance has not once violated the ceasefire agreements nor retaliated against the Zionist war criminals. Ezzat Ar-Reshech, a founding member of Hamas Political Bureau, reacted, stating, "The enemy will not achieve through war and destruction what it has failed to achieve through negotiations." Trump's greenlighting of Israel's bloodbath makes him directly culpable for a series of war crimes, including genocide and ethnic cleansing. By facilitating the wave of airstrikes, arming and funding the Zionist regime, just like his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has once again proven that he is indeed a warmonger. Israeli activist Alon Mizrahi captured the devastation of this renewed genocide, immediately followed by harrowing images, as a tsunami of shock, disbelief, and pain. He put it in these words, quote, "Let's allow these feelings to crystallize into even a stronger resolution and conviction," unquote.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Zay. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sayyid Zay, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
The concept of truth, al-haq, wal-batil, falsehood, from the perspective of the Quran. Okay, Sayyid Zain, first of all, give us a picture how Quran defines haq and batil for us. I mean, what are the main standards or criteria for defining haq and batil according to the Holy Quran?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. One idea would be of truth and falsehood, that which is in accordance with reality would be haq, and that which is against reality would be batil or falsehood.
Yes.
The other idea is related to guidance and misguidance, which is again related to truth and falsehood, that which takes us towards guidance or takes us towards truth, that is haq, and that which takes us towards falsehood and away from that truth is batil. And another idea, again, would be to do with now forces that are in the world, right?
Yes.
That those who are upon the guidance and those who are for, you know, forwarding the ideas of reality, they would be the people of truth, people of haq. And those who are against this,
yes,
who are working against this, they would be batil. Okay.
Very good.
So those are some ideas that come to mind regarding, you know, haq and batil.
That's right. In Surah Al-Isra, ayah 81, as we read, and say the truth has come and falsehood has vanished. Indeed, falsehood is bound to vanish. So this is a promise of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran that falsehood mm-hmm. will be vanished. Okay. So many people interpret falsehood, Shaykh Rouhani, and truth according to their own school of thoughts and ideology. So who is to believe, who is not to believe, Shaykh?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, every school of thought may have its own, let's say, analysis or explanation regarding falsehood and truth. What matters most to us is this, that we should look at this triumph of the truth or falsehood from the Islamic perspective, and particularly Quranic perspective. According to the Holy Quran, the triumph of truth or falsehood is a manifestation of the purposeful divine order. The victory of truth or falsehood is not accidental. It reflects the divine wisdom and justice embedded in creation. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran says that, and say truth has come and falsehood has perished. Indeed, falsehood is bound to perish.
That's right.
This is what is explicitly mentioned in the ayat of the Holy Quran, chapter 17, ayah, or verse number 81.
This surah Al-Isra, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
Also okay. We have this beautiful ayah again in the Holy Quran in chapter 22, ayah 40, says that, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will surely support those who support him. Indeed, Allah is powerful and exalted in might. So in this, from this ayah, we understand that the front of truth moves towards victory,
mm-hmm.
despite the hypocrites' oppositions. And historically talking, according to the Holy Quran, we have many examples of victory of the truth over falsehood in the history.
All right.
For example, the destruction of Pharaoh,
yes,
and his, let's say, army, which
yes.
is mentioned in the ayat of the Holy Quran, mm-hmm. or the defeat of disbelievers in the Battle of Badr,
mm-hmm.
which is mentioned in the ayat of the Holy Quran,
very
or
good.
The downfall of the people of Ad and Thamud,
yes,
and the oppressive nations. These are the examples, historically talking, are mentioned in the ayat of the Holy Quran, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala promises in the Quran that
right.
finally the truth will be let's say victorious
right.
Over the falsehood.
Okay.
And these are
that's
the
right.
facts that
that's
are mentioned
right.
in the ayat of
very
the
good.
Quran. Yes.
And a major question is that so many people ask, so why falsehood is now victorious? I mean
mm-hmm.
The true definition of victory has to be clarified. For example, at the time of Imam al-Hussein, you know, Yazid killed Imam al-Hussein, so it seems that Yazid was victorious.
Right.
Imam al-Hussein was the absolute truth, manifestation of the truth, and the people and the king side saw that, okay, now we are truthful, and Hussein was false.
Right.
So I do want to say that, again, it is the same. History is repeating itself. Nowadays, the people of Israel, we can say the people of Palestine, the innocent kids are being killed by the Israel, and the Israel think that they are victorious.
Mm-hmm.
But the history might show itself
right.
maybe
mm-hmm.
two centuries from now on
mm-hmm.
that the kids were victorious
right.
and not you.
No, I completely agree. And I think one of the clearest examples is exactly what you mentioned
mm-hmm.
in history with regards to Imam Hussein alayhi salam,
uh-huh.
that if you look at it in terms of, and like if you were present at that time and we were, you know, like say news reporters, you would have said that, that you know, Imam Hussein and his camp, they were completely destroyed
yeah.
and complete victory was for Yazid. But if you look at how things have played out, in hindsight, we can see that Imam Hussein definitely was victorious, right? There's
yes.
no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. The changes that came into the Muslim nation after Imam Hussein, because of what Imam Hussein had done, and how Islam was, you know, made alive again, that's because of, it shows the victory of Imam Hussein alayhi salam over Yazid. And okay. What Yazid wanted to do was completely crush Islam, yes. And Islam lived.
Yes.
And there, that is a victory of truth over falsehood. So yes, you know, at certain times, if you look at, you know, especially while we're in that situation, we might think that, oh, falsehood is winning, falsehood is gonna, you know, prevail. But that's not the case, uh-huh. Right? The truth will win. Okay, I think the main question for us is not whether truth will win or not.
All right.
Because that's Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's promise, that truth will win. That is what we've seen in the past, in the different stories of the prophets, in Imam Hussein's time. That truth will win. Okay. The main question for us is that, will I be on the truth or not?
Uh-huh.
Right. That is the main question.
Okay.
What, you know, am I going to be those people who help it win, whom Allah uses, inshallah, for His purposes? Or am I going to be somebody who's going to lose hope?
Yes.
And see that, you know, in front of me what is happening and be overwhelmed by it?
Yes.
And say that, oh, there is no hope.
That's right.
And go and do my own thing on the side. Or no, I'm going to actually try and do what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants, and be a part of this victory as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. Okay. And Sheikh Rouhani, you explained very beautifully what is victory and what is truth and what is falsehood based on the Holy Quran, okay? Nowadays, distinguishing between right and wrong becomes very much difficult. I mean, it is difficult. So who is right, who is wrong, okay? Even in the Muslim communities, we could see that there are some disagreements. Even we could see that, for example, the innocent children of the Palestine are not backed and supported by the Muslim kings all around the world, okay? So it seems that religion and religious teachings are not the mere criteria, and ethics and morality are also at work. So how to distinguish, and how not to get into the trap of the so-called ethical developments of the Western secular world? Because on that time in the secular world, some ethical, moral values are also overemphasized. How to distinguish between these two, Shaykh?
Justice is a principle in which all people across the globe believe.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot find any single person in the entire world who would be opposite to justice and support oppression.
All right.
This is what Islam also advocate. Because according to Islam, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is just and fair. And He created this universe based on justice.
Okay.
And our creation is also completely in accordance with that divine justice.
Mm-hmm.
And the day of Qiyamah is the final manifestation or the divine manifestation of justice.
Okay.
So these are the beliefs that we Muslims believe.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever and whenever you see oppression, you must be 100% sure that is opposed to divine will or divine irada, iradatullahi ta'ala subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
But here is one significant point that should be mentioned. That is this, that the triumph of victory of, let's say, truth over falsehood,
that's right,
needs actions.
Uh-huh.
The people should take action.
Uh-huh.
People's will and irada is also play a very significant role.
Very good.
Because in the Holy Quran, it is said that very explicitly, we see in the ayat of the Holy Quran that, indeed Allah will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In the chapter 13, ayah number 11, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala very, very explicitly tell us that victory requires faith, struggle, and reliance on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Struggle is important.
Struggle,
right,
is very, yeah, much important. Okay. Sometimes people do not take any action,
uh-huh,
and then expect that, for example, why falsehood is, for example, prevailed or victorious.
Yes.
Because you did not take any action. In the story of Karbala that you mentioned, uh-huh, yes,
in,
yeah,
comparison to the Western world, so struggle is over there, maybe, okay? Isn't,
exactly,
it? So, yeah, that's why the people,
the
sometimes
more you struggle, the more you achieve naturally.
Naturally.
The,
okay,
more you active, the more you achieve.
Uh huh.
Even wrong things.
All right.
Yeah. This is nature. This, yeah, is nature. That's why we naturally can try to do something. Look at these false kind of systems that are working now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and achieve many people achieve via
NRMs, religious movements, that's
illegal,
right.
Immoral, let's say, kind of actions.
The spiritual movements,
yeah,
that's right.
Unfortunately.
Okay.
But this is the duty of Muslims. This mm-hmm. is the duty of mu'min. A mu'min should ask himself that, okay, what am I doing now?
Mm-hmm.
What is my duty? What is my position? What is my status? Yeah, in this regard, for example, when we see that false things are doing and people are doing these things, should we just keep silent and make dua? Or we should take action?
Uh-huh.
Yeah? If you do not take action, of course, Karbala will repeatedly happen.
May Allah help us from the satanic temptations, and may Allah help us to decide on the right side of the history, as the Supreme Leader of Iran said that, that's right, to the Europeans and the students of the foreign universities all across the world, that you are on the right side of the history, okay? And standing by the right side of the history and the truth is really, really important. Thank you, Imam Sayyid Zain and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of truth and falsehood from the perspective of the whole Quran. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Weird Points. Please, for more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, except Allah. يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. the limelight.
The International Court of Justice has already established that there is a case for genocide in Gaza. Both the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary have a duty to the UK to accept the ICJ's findings and publicly acknowledge the genocide being committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza. Formal acknowledgement of the ICJ's ruling of genocide would have serious and immediate consequences for the UK's dealings with the Israeli regime. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, during a parliamentary debate in November last year, independent lawmaker Ayub Khan reminded British Prime Minister Keir Starmer that genocide was defined by Article 2 of the UN Genocide Convention and asked him what his definition of genocide was. Starmer replied that he was well aware of the definition of genocide, and that is why I have never described this or refer to it as genocide. In December 2023, South Africa filed a case against the Zionist regime at the International Court of Justice, accusing the Zionist regime of committing genocide in Gaza as defined by Article 2 of the Genocide Convention. Article 2 lists acts that constitute genocide, including the intentional destruction of a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group through acts such as killing, inflicting harm, and creating destructive conditions. On January 26, 2024, the ICJ concluded in a parliamentary finding that Israel's actions in Gaza constituted genocide and agreed to hear South Africa's case. Britain is a signatory to the ICJ and has made a declaration accepting its compulsory jurisdiction. Despite the ICJ's preliminary finding and even more damning, a recent UN report confirming that Israel's actions in Gaza are consistent with the characteristics of genocide, Starmer has continued to refuse to label Israel's actions in Gaza as genocide. This refusal to acknowledge the findings of both the ICJ and the UN underscores Starmer's ongoing reluctance to confront the scale of the atrocities being committed. Similarly, UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy last year also made the claim in Parliament that no genocide was occurring in Gaza because not enough people had died, he claimed. In his response to Conservative lawmaker Nick Timothy's request that the Foreign Secretary take this opportunity to say that there is not a genocide occurring in the Middle East, Lammy said that, "I agree with the honorable gentleman that those terms were largely used when millions of people lost their lives in crises such as Rwanda and the Second World War. The way that people are now using those terms undermines their seriousness." However, both men have used the word genocide for other areas of the world involving far less deaths than in Gaza. To claim that genocide is not occurring in Gaza ultimately serves to benefit the child killer regime of Israel. Such denial deflects international scrutiny and shields Israel from legal consequences on the global stage, protecting its military and political interests. However, Starmer and Lammy's approach does not fundamentally change the UK's commitments under domestic law. For example, denying Israel's genocide has no bearing on the UK's strategic export licensing criteria, which governs military exports. These criteria do not require a determination of genocide to restrict arms sales, but instead focus on violations of international humanitarian law, a far lower threshold. Similarly, war crimes and crimes against humanity are punishable under UK domestic law, regardless of whether a genocide is formally recognized. On the contrary, genocide denialism undermines the UK interest and damages its international reputation. By refusing to acknowledge credible determinations of genocide, Starmer risks weakening the UK's credibility and diminishing confidence in its commitment to upholding international treaties and obligations. It is not a surprise that both men have attempted to deny Israel's genocide of the Palestinians. Starmer and Lamy were both listed as parliamentary supporters of Labour Friends of Israel in its last publicly available list before the group deleted from their website shortly before the last election. Both Starmer and Lamy have also received significant funding from pro-Israeli lobbyists. Starmer says he supports Zionism without qualification, apparently meaning that no war crime committed by Zionists will ever make him waver in his support. But although these Labour Friends of Israel lawmakers are both trying to redefine the term genocide for the sole benefit of Israel, their personal opinions are irrelevant. The UK government has consistently confirmed that its long-standing position on acknowledging genocide is that it is for courts to determine and not government. Consequently, it matters little that Lamy or Starmer's personal views are on the genocide in Gaza or the denial of it. The UK's position has consistently been that the determination of genocide is a matter for the courts, not for political debate. The International Court of Justice has already established that there is a case for genocide in Gaza. Both the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary have a duty to the UK to accept the ICJ's findings and publicly acknowledge the genocide being committed by Israel in Gaza. Formal acknowledgement of the ICJ's ruling of genocide would have serious and immediate consequences for the UK's dealings with the Zionist regime. In the first instance, it would mean that in determining whether to grant export licenses of arms to Israel, the clear risk requirement of the export criteria is overwhelmingly met by the ICJ ruling. This is established in Criterion 2 of the export criteria, which does not require a finding of genocide to halt arms sales. Having assessed the recipient country's attitude toward relevant principles established by instruments of international humanitarian law, the government will not grant a license if it determines there is a clear risk that the items might be used to commit or facilitate a serious violation of international humanitarian law. This would mean all export licenses would have to be halted immediately, and that under domestic law, the UK would no longer be able to provide support to Israel in its commission of war crimes and genocide. Sections 52 to 55 of the International Criminal Court Act 2001 make it an offence to aid or abet the committing of genocide, war crimes, or crimes against humanity. This is, of course, including flying reconnaissance flights over Gaza or offering military assistance. Foreign Office civil servants are increasingly emboldened to speak out about Britain's growing complicity with Israel's war crimes, and with an expedited judicial review granted by the High Court over the UK's continued arms trade to Israel, it might well be that Keir Starmer ends up with no choice but to finally accept the ICJ's interim ruling that genocide is occurring in Gaza.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes kill more Palestinian women and children across Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocide. The heads of six UN agencies issue a grave warning on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, calling for the immediate resumption of the ceasefire. And Iran's foreign minister rejects Trump's claim about direct talks between Tehran and Washington, stressing that negotiations in Oman will be high-level but indirect. Welcome to the program. Gaza is witnessing more deaths and destruction as Israeli forces press ahead with their relentless air and artillery strikes across the blockaded territory. In one of the latest attacks, at least five Palestinians were killed and several others wounded after a residential building was bombed in Safina, northwest of Gaza City. In the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah, an Israeli airstrike targeted a Palestinian home, leaving at least nine civilians dead and several others injured. Other parts of Deir al-Balah were also targeted by multiple air and artillery